September 1978. A 16-year-old Brooklyn kid with long hair and a free keef button sits in his high school supply room, mimeographing copies of a homemade Rolling Stones newsletter. His classmates mock him, embracing disco while he worships guitar gods. Record shops refuse to stock his fanzine. Yet this rejection only fuels his obsession. What Bill German couldn't have known was that his scrappy publication, Beggar's Banquet, would become his golden ticket, a 17-year backstage pass that would take him from teenage outcast to drinking bourbon with Keith Richards, cleaning up Mick Jagger's spills, and witnessing the inner workings of rock's greatest band. Unlike sanitized rock memoirs that airbrush the chaos, this story reveals something rarer. What happens when a passionate fan crosses the velvet rope and discovers his heroes are brilliantly flawed humans navigating their own labyrinth of ego, addiction, and betrayal? Keith Richards himself reportedly told his inner circle, "This kid got it right." While peers divided into Floydies and Styx chicks, German persisted with his newsletter, developing sources through determination. His breakthrough came during the Stones' New York period, when the band integrated into Manhattan's fabric, frequenting clubs and referencing the city in their lyrics. Mick sang about Central Park and dropped Yiddish terms like shmata. German's relentless staking out paid off at the Emotional Rescue release party, where he finally met Ron Wood. This led to regular visits to the Rolling Stones records office, where he delivered his newsletter to executives and even Mick's doorman. The ultimate validation came when Art Collins invited him to interview Ian Stewart, the sixth Stone, who proved candid and friendly despite German's nervousness. By 1983, German's persistence so impressed the organization that Gordon Bennett called with an incredible offer to make Beggar's Banquet the official Rolling Stones newsletter, potentially reaching thousands worldwide. For a young fan from Brooklyn, this was beyond anything he'd dreamed. Yet dreams often come with fine print written in invisible ink. Within weeks of that life-changing phone call, German found himself in the Stones' inner circle, spilling orange juice on Mick's expensive oriental rug and watching Keith pull a silver switchblade on his ginger ale bottle. These thrilling moments masked a harsh reality. The contract demanded complete ownership of his magazine for essentially no compensation, just a modest $2,500 per issue salary guaranteed for only 6 issues. Despite hiring an attorney for $2,000 he could barely afford, German remained unpaid for months. Keith became his unlikely advocate. "You don't have to sign anything. You've got leverage." Bill Wyman eventually intervened, but the relationship remained adversarial throughout the 6 bi-monthly issues. Editorial freedom proved equally illusory. Mick arbitrarily rejected approved cover photos. Bill prohibited any photos featuring girlfriends to hide his affairs. Keith's manager meticulously removed words like stumbled or tired that might imply drug use. German also learned Keith was officially a resident of Jamaica for tax purposes. His New York properties could never be called homes, only houses. For someone who'd spent years analyzing their creative process, this revelation was particularly disillusioning. By 1985, the Rolling Stones were effectively breaking up. Each member had separate management and offices. During Paris recording sessions, Mick focused on his solo album, She's the Boss, while Keith and Woody, feeling betrayed, wrote aggressive songs like Had It With You and Knock Your Teeth Out, secretly directed at Mick, whom they nicknamed Brenda. As Woody explained, "Mick Jagger is a nice bunch of guys. He changes his accent every time you speak to him, and you never know which Mick you're going to get." Their fracture was evident in studio schedules. Mick arrived at dusk and left around midnight, while Keith and Woody showed up after midnight and worked until sunrise. Live Aid became a major flashpoint. Initially agreeing not to participate, Mick caved to public pressure and arranged to perform solo with Tina Turner. When Keith learned Mick was rehearsing Beast of Burden, a song Keith felt possessive about, he was furious. Keith and Woody orchestrated backing Bob Dylan instead. At Live Aid, Mick performed in prime time, ripping off Tina's skirt during It's Only Rock and Roll. Keith and Woody followed with an under-rehearsed acoustic set. Backstage, their divergent worlds collided. Keith hosted music people like Phil Spector and Tom Petty. Mick entertained Hollywood royalty, including Barbara Streisand and Michael Douglas. The Stones' world was populated by extraordinary characters. Freddie Sessler, a Holocaust survivor decades older than the band, possessed the coveted all-access laminate after taking the fall for Keith and Woody when drugs were found in their Arkansas car in 1975. Though Mick merely tolerated him, Keith considered Freddie a father figure, loud, opinionated, fearless enough to tell Keith when shows sucked. Despite strokes, heart attacks, and cancer, nothing kept Freddie from a tour. Then there was Smithy, Keith's assistant, both licensed pharmacist and Talmudic scholar. He'd met the Stones in 1979 while traveling Europe in a decommissioned British taxi smuggling hash. After initially walking out when kept waiting at Poth Marconi's studio, Smithy became Keith's supplier and later his official assistant. Woody's townhouse guests were mostly drug connections with mysterious jobs and nicknames. The house buzzed with electricity, some high on creativity, others on drugs, Woody on both. German always declined the cocaine, wanting to stay alert as both fan and reporter. This abstinence raised suspicion, yet German became valuable to Woody since he could actually discuss the Stones' music, unlike his dealer friends. The 1989 Steel Wheels tour revealed rock's most complex operation. At Shea Stadium, German discovered a strict backstage hierarchy with 8 pass types, round, square, oval, triangular, each granting specific access. Most backstage credentials never reached backstage. From his cubbyhole beside backup singers, German performed before 60,000 fans. When Mick and Woody descended the stage right ramp, he could grab their ankles. The space revealed dozens of crew with headsets, the blowjob team inflating giant balloons, and band members casually chatting during Sympathy for the Devil while Mick performed above. The Mick-Keith divide shaped their music. Mick demanded rigid arrangements reproducing album versions, a business decision for baby boomers wanting familiarity. Keith preferred improvisation, deliberately dragging introductions or delaying strikes to disrupt Mick's timing. The Mick-Keith divide shaped their music. Canadian promoter Michael Cole revolutionized concerts by offering $65 million guaranteed plus profits. He recouped through unprecedented $30 tickets, corporate sponsorships, and $450 Steel Wheels jackets. Under their deal, there were no freebies. Even the Stones' wives paid for seats. By 1993, German was crumbling. Despite covering 34 concerts across continents, Jane Rose rejected his proposal to write the official tour book, which became glossy fluff, omitting historic moments like Prague's 107,000 fan concert after Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution. His $14,000 annual income from 90-hour work weeks, VH1 mockery, authors stealing his accounts, and his girlfriend's ultimatum pushed him toward contemplating suicide. He'd spent his entire adult life celebrating others' accomplishments instead of pursuing his own. At Keith's surprise 50th birthday party in December 1993, Keith delivered words that changed everything. "Hey man, I didn't ask you to. No one's making ya." Though seemingly harsh, with a supportive hand on German's shoulder, it felt like absolution. He was free to go. After covering the European leg of the Voodoo Lounge tour, German ended Beggar's Banquet in January 1996. Keith's first words, "You look like a great weight has been lifted off you." After 17 years and 102 issues, hundreds of previously silent subscribers poured out their hearts. German's journey represents rock history's most unique perspective, a passionate fan who earned the ultimate backstage pass and discovered his heroes were extraordinary yet deeply flawed humans. Sometimes the greatest gift isn't getting everything you wanted, it's learning when to walk away.